We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to Insane in the Membrane's top 10 biggest episodes in no particular order. We're building up to our third anniversary and a celebrity special show coming your way. Keep an eye out for that. Honestly, it's a big one. I've mentioned it to a couple of mates and they're like, really? I'm like, oh yeah. They're well chuffed he's coming on and you're going to have a great listen to him and his partner. It's going to be a good one. With some past belters that might have gotten buried with our almost 150 episodes. We're trying to bring some of the names from further down the list in up to the top so people might have missed them. Just a celebration of the almost 3 years now. So just showing you the great names that we've had on. Also, big thanks to our Patreons as always, because without you, we wouldn't be able to do this. You really do keep us going. Patrons like Mia Rainey and Lee Brown, again, become mates. So, you know, this is what happens with building a community. It's a beautiful thing. This episode, this was recorded in April 2020. So it would have been just at the start of the first lockdown. So we were all getting our heads around the new weirdness that was going on. We were all sort of working from home. We were trying to keep busy, you know, so we weren't losing our minds because we're all locked indoors. Our guest was over in France in his lab. And so because it was rural France, the internet wasn't great. So the signal wasn't great, but we managed to get something together thanks to the brilliant producer Paul. And thank you to producer Paul, because honestly, you don't realise the magic that man works. Honestly, I mean, I get all the praise, but he does all the work. It's amazing. He's absolutely brilliant. And it was a huge struggle, but we eventually made it happen. And I'm really glad that we did. Because this guest, who I've actually spent a little bit of time with, he's just a dude. I mean, he's got his like sort of TV sort of personality that people know. They go, oh, that's him. But actually, when you get to know him, he's a really down to earth dude. He's brilliant. It's really wonderful to be in his company. So it was a real pleasure to have him on. So coming up now is Heston Blumenthal.
Where we are here, though, you don't really see anybody.
Oh, really?
I go running in the morning, got my bike and come to work in the development lab house. We've got Demetrius here. And we do our Zoom calls and do our various experiments and other stuff. And got trees and mountains and plants and bees and birds and stuff.
So it's no different then. It sounds amazing.
Exactly. It's no different. It's the same as before, although all the things that got me frustrated, if I put to one side the fact that the business is on its knees, but I'm not the only person. Take that aside. So many of my frustrations have been just removed for me.
Yeah, exactly the same. I feel straight. I've been feeling strangely zen about it all.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Even though, like you say, even though like the same with us, we lost all of our gigs and everything in the space of like
a minute,
20 minutes or something. But yeah, you kind of go, well, yeah, nothing I can do about it. Okay, I'll just see it then. It's weird.
Yeah, it's a bit like, I think, a plaster ripping moment. I mean, how would you feel if, I haven't got an answer to this. Imagine if, and this is completely hypothetical, but the government today or tomorrow said, right, next week, all back to normal. I'm sure everyone or most people, maybe not instantly, but over a period of time will think, oh, I kind of like that bit of this. But they they couldn't see it because there's so many, you know. I just think I heard a podcast actually with Russell Brand the other day with a guy called Charles Eisenstein.
Oh yeah,
and he said something I thought was a brilliant way of summing up. We used to worship in cathedrals and churches and make those sort of pilgrimages. We now worship quantity.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we're live longer, more money, more friends on social media, quantity. Choice, consumption, consummation, quantity. I thought it was a really simple, strong way of summing it up. That's our church. Human beings generally, their new church now is the church of quantity.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of people I've spoken to, they've suddenly gone, oh shit, we have kind of lost our way and we got caught up in the mechanism of all this, like, capitalism and everything, and now it's all been taken away. We're suddenly going, no, do you know what? It's actually quite nice. I'm talking to people I've not spoken to in 10 years. It's been amazing. You know?
So it's like that plaster, you rip a plaster off and you go, ow! hang on a second.
Yeah, that's nice. It's been amazing. Like, obviously it's been the people have, you know, they've suffered more than we have, and you look at the numbers and you're like, Jesus Christ, it's mind boggling. But, and I think that as well kind of makes you reassess. You go, Christ, at least, you know, it's sad that people have lost their lives and people are really gravely ill, but you kind of, small mercies, you kind of go, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, this is a massive wake-up call.
Yeah, it should be.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
It should be.
Oh, God, yeah. I tell you what, it's funny. I was just, when we were setting this up, thank you for your patience as well, Heston.
Yeah, I wasn't completely irresponsible for that delay. I'm sure a lot of this is my internet connection from here. have we started? Are we just chatting?
Yeah, just chatting, mate. This is how we do it. And
brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no flashy intro. We just get on with it, and whatever happens, happens. It's all good, clean fun. What was funny as we were doing that, and I was getting a little bit stressed out. I'm like, oh, fuck this, shit. We need to get this sorted out. I was drinking a gin and tonic, and this put me in mind of that test that you and Jade did last time I saw you, about how your emotions change the taste of things. Because as I was getting more stressed, the gin and tonic I've got became
more bitter.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, that thing's happening right now.
That's the beauty, I think, of awareness. And I think this, if it's like we've, at this time, it's even more opportunity to look at what's really valuable in our lives. So if you think, I think the most intimate relationship a human being has is with themselves and their breath, because you've got to breathe, obviously, first to live.
Yes.
Then it's with what you drink and then with what you eat and then sleep. So I think food and sleep, you're looking at, you know, roughly the same time that if you go without the both, either of those, you die. Once you've done those things, you can kind of get on with the other priority of things that you value in life. But you've got to breathe and drink and eat and sleep. But obviously breathing is autonomic. So you've got to physically drink, you've got to physically eat, and you've got to physically breathe. You don't have to at some point. You just, actually, that's a good point. You do pass out, but you've got to physically eat.
Yeah.
And I think that what we've done, going back to that Charles Eisenstein comment about we worship quantity, is that when we were hunter-gatherers, we valued the need to breathe and to drink and to eat much more than we do now.
Yes.
Because we've made our lives so much more comfortable generally in the Western world and in the modern world in terms of accessibility to food and stuff. So then we only look at all the things outside our bodies that are going to make our lives better. So when I get a pay rise or a new job title, I get more money. If I live longer and I get more friends on social media and have a new pair of shoes and all of this stuff, my life's going to be better. But if you have, if your relationship with your internal universe is not up to speed with your relationship with your external universe, then you're always chasing your tail. Whenever you've got something, you're ready to think about the next thing, and it's never enough. And I've realized that even when you apply it to cooking, and actually when we did the show, Jade, it was a fascinating thing I hadn't really thought about that much before, when you have people that are cooking food on social media. Now chefs are going mad cooking on YouTube, cooking. This flingue, this is beautiful. Like you just said about the gin, nobody is talking about their relationship with food.
No, it's all about, yeah, like you say, the quantity of it. It's that more. Yeah.
More object beautiful, isn't this? Look at your relationship with it. So when you eating mindfully, eating, you know, you can tell a story around the classic one of a raisin boil or a gin and tonic. You know, what does it feel like? The weight of the glass, if there's any ice cubes in it, the chink of the ice cube, where did that gin, that came from, you know, herbs, yeah, another plant matter, and it was fermented, and somebody might have spent their life's work developing a technique for making that gin, and then it was bottled and all of this kind of stuff. And how does it feel in your mouth and on your lips and the smell and all of that? And what happens is if what we tend to do, rather than looking at our relationship with food, we just put food in our mouths.
Yes.
So we're not aware of the nuances of the food. And the really simple thing that I think is good to do to kids, and anyone listening should do this, is if you ask what's the difference between taste and flavor?
Right, yeah.
Now, taste is in the mouth. So you've got salt, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami. That's in the mouth and the tongue. And flavor is a combination of taste and aroma. So the aroma is your nose. So have you got an apple or an olive or a...
Hang on a minute, I'll grab it. 2 seconds, hold on.
Look at
hold
this, on. Live on the edge.
Shit. Well, I'm back. Sorry about that. I'm back. Everyone's gone out. I've got. Sorry, Heston.
That's all right. It's worth the wait.
I've got an apple.
Okay. So now, clench your nostrils nice and tight. So there's no, you can't get any air through them.
Okay.
Have a nice bite of the apple. And when you're chomping it with your nostrils still clenched, can you taste its sweetness and maybe its sourness and maybe a bit of bitterness, maybe even a bit of salt? Now, so think about that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, let go of your, as you're crunching, let go of your nostrils. Did you get the apple?
Oh,
flavor?
Yeah.
You see, it comes flooding through.
Yeah, like a what? Yeah, amazing.
And so the sense of smell and the sense of taste are no more closely they're no closer or further apart than the sense of sight and the sense of smell, but they're all interconnected. And that's why, do you remember those old tunes adverts? For the
yeah, yeah, yeah. Cuts? Yeah.
Tunes makes you
feel
that's it. Yeah. That's why you're cold, you can't taste your food so much.
Amazing. And, oh God.
So there's lovely little experiments like this when you're quarantined, stuck in at home, that maybe next time when you eat, it's all very well to think about the cooking, the recipes, the ingredients, the techniques, and how beautiful it looks. But it's when it comes alive with your awareness, if you can, you think, what's happening when I'm eating that? When did that come from? You know, just
ask
yourself loads of questions.
But it's funny, like you said, about having the right glass and the right, and the story of how that whatever you're drinking or eating came to be in front of you. You're right.
Yes.
It really adds to it. And like people, like if you drink a cup of tea, people like they have their mug because they like that, the feel of it.
Same.
Like say, yeah, so it's a yeah, I get it, man. I totally
it's
get
the
it.
It's the same thing. It's a story behind it as well. And if you know that there, if you then take your ownership. So you could, it's even, I love the idea that somebody could have been eating Mars bars, for example, or, you know, drinking Coca-Cola for 15 years. And then someone tells a story around it. And then ask the questions of the person that's tasting it, that's eaten that thing for, drunk that thing for years. Have you ever thought how this feels if you close your nostrils and if you smell it through one nostril or the other, or close your eyes, and how does that feel? And then it's that question where you individually can discover something new about your relationship with food, and it's non-judgmental. And we live in a society, everyone, not everyone, but it's so judgmental. Eat this, don't eat this. Do that, don't eat that. And like, have you heard of a guy called Gabo Mate?
No.
He's a doctor, and he's one of the world's leading experts on addiction. And he ran the largest palliative care clinic in Canada, and started, he's one of the first people that he ran the clinic where they would, if you get people on heroin and stuff, that you could go and get a clean needle. And he looked after Keith Richards. I think he looked after Betty Ford, and he's written several books, and one amazing one called When the Body Says No. And what he says, he goes through with that book, cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes, Parkinson's, bronchitis, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, ALS, and a load of others. And he said the cause of all of these is inflammation of the cells in our body, which is caused by unaware stress generated from childhood.
Oh, wow.
So if you smoke, if smoking gave you cancer, full stop, then everyone that smoked would get cancer. He said smoking gives you potential increase in cancerous cells, but they're dormant. We've all got cancerous cells in our bodies.
Yes.
He said, when you carry unaware stress, and that manifests itself in things like people pleasing, not altruism, but people pleasing, repressed anger, not rage, but repressed anger, not inability to be able to show your emotions, and some other things, it means the body is blocked in emotional trauma from childhood.
Wow.
And without the individual realizing it. So that inflames the cells and our immune system.
Okay.
And it's that inflammation that, like, if you're smoking, he said, he gave an example of like 94% of all breast cancer cases are the same, the women had unaware stress from childhood. And it was only through, you know, questioning and surveying and therapy and stuff when it started to come out. And that inflames our immune system. And this is, I think, very relevant to what's happening now with these viruses. And there'll be more of them coming. If you're aware of your stress, it's one thing. But if you're not aware of it, then you inflame your body. And did you remember when we were filming, I showed you this rice experiment with this Japanese guy?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Dimitri here, we've done it several times now. Three jars of rice, same water, and put them there. They're like kilner jars, and he's done it in Greek and he's done it in English. Every day, you give one jar love and gratitude and appreciation.
Yeah.
You give another jar stupid, useless, worthless, blah, and you give the other jar nothing, indifference, ignore it. But you have to have the intent behind the words.
Okay.
And you can see this online. Gratification and love and intent goes slightly orangey and ferments. The one that's been, say, verbally abused goes black, and the one that's been ignored rots.
What?
Yes, and what? So when Dimitri did it here, it's amazing. The difference is unbelievable. We smelt it. My God. So it's the effective emotion. And what this Japanese professor was saying is that actually indifference to children, if ignoring, being ignored.
Yes.
And it's the same thing as ignoring yourself. We all need connection. Anyway, it's a fascinating.
No, it's excellent. No, not at all. It's things like this that people need to know, because we are affected by it. Like we said before, when we were setting up, we didn't realise how stressed we were before we all got put in quarantine.
This is why Alzheimer's for me is such a terrible disease to have, because I remember a few years ago we've had discussions about past and stuff, and I only now can I see how stressed I was and how lonely I was, really, really lonely. But if you asked me for, say, 5 years ago, are you stressed and lonely? I said, don't be silly. I wouldn't have thought it.
Yeah, wow.
It's just with memory gives us this opportunity to reflect and ask questions about ourselves. And if you can do it without judgment, not always that easy for people, but if you can, you know, you look back and think, bloody hell, how did I do that? God knows what the rice granules inside my body smell like.
Oh man, I could totally relate to that. Oh my God, I think mine would be on fire. thinking back to a time when I was being a bit naughty and I was mucking around, I was doing things I shouldn't have done, and I was taking things and doing stuff. Oh my God, but you're not aware, you kind of you know, there's a little voice in the back of your mind going, mate, what are you doing, but then you go, bollocks to that, and you just start and you carry on blocking
Yeah, and that Gabamate guy also said that with addiction, when people are, and addiction can obviously range from, you know, alcohol to drugs to shopping to porn, gambling, you know, when it becomes a problem, what happens is the abuse, the body does it to keep itself alive.
Right.
Although it's damaging itself, in some cases massively, but you keep doing it because while you're doing it, it feels better. But in fact, what you're doing is then deferring the long term negatives. But it's a form of pain killing. But you can only see it. You're deferring the pain.
Yeah.
And so at the time of doing whatever it is, you're brushing it under the table, and it's like this sort of you know, memories of some form of abuse in childhood. The brain has a very, you know, self-defensive sort of mechanism that can lock them away. You block them so deep that your memory can play tricks on you, or you can play tricks on your memory, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming and podcast production.
I do have a greater appreciation now of certainly of food and things like that, where I was just eating shit before. It was a pasty of some description, and I remember I used to live on those, and then I had one recently and I went, oh my God, this just tastes like cardboard. Why have I been eating this? Because I wasn't thinking. I was like, I'll just pile that in, it doesn't matter. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that's one of my big things going forward, is to see if we can find ways to reignite or ignite people's relationship with food. So it's not me saying, you know, I want to change our relationship with food, because that can be judgmental. But if I could give, even in any little way, the catalyst for others to discover something new in terms of awareness with their relationship with the food that they're eating, or maybe the food that they're cooking, and they go, oh, I never thought about that. Oh my God. I wonder if that's like that, then how many other things, and then start asking more questions about, you might have eaten oranges for 20 years, but, you know, never looked at an orange quite like this before. And it doesn't have a right or wrong to it.
I remember the first time I had a tomato that actually tasted of a tomato, and it tasted weird. You go, well, this is odd. Because you've had ketchup for 20 years.
I remember it's like a chicken. If you, in here in France, have these expensive breast chickens. And this is going back to 20 years, where maybe 30 years, where a lot of chickens in the UK were still fed on fish food. And then you go and eat a breast chicken and you think, is this chicken off? Because it tastes really strong and gamey to me. Well, actually, that's what chicken tastes like.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? It's really weird.
And you know, the food, because how is the general public supposed to know with the labelling laws? You know, I think that what's happened is, you know, companies are finding ever increasingly subtle ways to lie to people, right? To make money from people. And if you think you've got all these labelling laws, which, you know, are done with the design and the intent to help people and protect people, but then what happens is the stronger the laws become, the more subtle ways use of sort of playing around them. So one of them is those turkey or chicken slices in packets that are they're like the size of about half a chessboard or something. And you think, well, hang on a second, chickens don't have breasts that big.
No.
How come they're in a slice? Well, I didn't really think about that. And then on the packet, all you need is a painting of a manor house, a watercolour painting of a manor house. And the person that's shopping will pick up the packet, and it's not even a conscious thing. They'll automatically think that those chickens or turkeys have been running around that field in front of that lovely Downton Abbey style manor house. Yeah. All they'd have to see is a painting of the abattoir and the battery house that might have come from. They might change their mind. I'm but not even, saying they are wrong. It's just the fact that people, we just, there's such a lack of transparency in so much stuff. And when it does come out, there's always got a level of judgment to it.
Yes.
Yeah. It goes back to what you said. And I was reading up, before I did this, I was just reading up on you. And it talks about when you first sort of got into food, when you went to a restaurant and there was like a fountain in the background and there was this going on. And that changed how you changed the taste of the food and how you saw food. And it's the same, like you've just said, people see this picture of a manor house or something pretty and they go, that must be all right. Yeah. So it goes back to what you were saying.
And the adverts you see on TV and stuff like that. And in fact, you know, I remember that, funny enough, because I'm now where I live now and where our development kitchen is 15 minutes away from that restaurant. And I remember at the time, I grew up, actually it's quite funny, I was born in the 60s in Britain. And do you remember a few years ago, there was a G7 summit meeting at Glen Eagles and Jack Chirac said, Britain has the worst food in Europe, second only to Finland. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It was an outrage. I remember doing an interview with one of the Channel news companies. and Jack Chirac at the time, my old maitre d' looked after him in one of the G7 meetings in a restaurant in France. And there was, I think this is when John Major was prime minister, and they had some tasting menu and he just drank beer through the whole menu. He wasn't overly interested in food. Nothing wrong with drinking beer, but he wasn't overly interested in food. So he made this comment, and no offense to Finnish people, but you know, as a Brit and a chef, I took offense to that.
Yeah, of course.
I checked this with Sebastian Coe a couple of years later, that he said, yes, it's true. So what I'm about to say is that the G7, that Jack Chirac comment was made only a couple of weeks before London and Paris battled it out for the Olympics.
Ah.
The two Finnish representatives, after he made that comment, withdrew their votes from Paris and gave them to London. And like, so we got our Olympics because of our cooking. There were some other things going on at the time, but he said, yeah, that was basically the last straw that broke the camel's back.
Amazing.
When I was a kid, he was probably right. When I was in the 70s, I grew up in London. You could only buy, you know, you could buy pasta.
Yes.
The only pasta you could buy was that spaghetti in a blue packet.
That was it. Yeah.
Remember that? And olive oil, you had to go to the chemist. It was something you poured into your ears when they were blocked.
Exactly. We used to boil everything. I mean, we had boiled toast, you know, it was just like, everything was just boiled.
Boiled toast. Don't give me ideas.
Oh no, he's going to go off now.
My head is filled with boiled toast. But because I grew up, we used to go to Cornwall. I remember Cornish pasty was a big, big, big thing for me when we'd go for our holidays. I know we never went abroad and I'd never been to a Michelin star restaurant. I didn't even know what an oyster looked like.
Same, let alone absolutely same.
Eaten one. So then my old man had a leasing company and he did quite well one year. They went to France and they took myself and my sister with them. So we had the same first time experience at this restaurant down the road. And I'm sure that had I have been to a restaurant that was remotely gastronomic beforehand, you know, seen white tablecloths with, you know, big wine glasses and a sommelier with his leather apron and all these bits, let alone the rock lit up at night and the crunching gravel, the feet of the waiting staff crunching on the gravel and the noise of the crickets and all of this stuff. Had I have had any gastronomic experience before, maybe you wouldn't have had the same impact.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah, you were just ready for it, it sounds like. Yeah.
And I think that's something, if you talk about the senses, before all of the senses, you need contrast.
Right.
Because without shadow, there's no sunlight. Without cold, there can be no hot. You need contrast.
Yeah.
And in our lives, we measure contrast. So the rate of change of something is much more noticeable. You don't notice the change of, you notice when it's gone nighttime, but if the light on your table flicked from on to off immediately, you notice that contrast. Same thing when you eat. If you bite into something that bursts, you get much more flavor.
Yeah.
Like you did with the apple, let go your nostrils, poof.
Yeah, that was incredible.
So I think that contrast was a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about senses and things like that. I remember very recently putting on an album that I've listened to a million times. It's an album I've loved forever, but I put it on with headphones and I actually sat and listened to it for the first time and it sounded completely different because I wasn't distracted. It was amazing. I totally get it, man.
That's great. It's exactly that. It's without distraction. I'm not saying that you have to do that every time you listen to a piece of music or every time you need to eat or want to eat. But if you can do it sometimes, it's like you open this whole new universe of discovery.
Yeah.
And we don't realize, I think one of the problems of modern society is we're distracted.
Yes, absolutely. Especially now. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man, all the time. I tell you what I wanted to ask you as well. Last time I spoke to you, so you were going off... Were you going off... we were talking about the study of water. You were going off to...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was because it's been on my mind since I last saw you. You were going... Because I remember you saying you thought water wasn't from... was an alien thing. Is that right?
Well,
I misheard that.
Water, no.
I don't want to make you sound mad. Well,
you don't have to.
Like David Icke, to do that.
So the idea that water has something like over 70 unique properties. It expands when you freeze, when everything else contracts. It defies gravity. If you think of sap rising from a tree, some little leaf. You see the little plants that can grow through tarmac. That's just expansion of water through the roots.
Incredible.
Water, nothing can live without water. Nothing can exist without water. I mean, even things that you think don't have, like metals, still have, they're not completely void of water. And there's a lot of research coming out now that water, if you believe in quantum theory or let's say string theory, everything is connected by vibrations, frequencies and vibrations. So everything has a frequency.
Yeah.
Just because you can't see it, there are light, the light has, we can only see a very fine bandwidth of light and we can only hear a very fine bandwidth of sounds. If you think of a dog whistle, dogs can hear it, but we can't. But just because we can't hear it, it doesn't mean to say it's not there. So everything is vibrating on this universe. That is what string theory says.
Wow.
The main thing that transfers vibrations is water. 70 to 90% of our body is water. So how can you put two of the lightest things that we know, hydrogen and oxygen, and you end up with this heavy liquid that can expand when you freeze it so much that it will just break buildings. It can crack through anything.
Yeah.
And so the a lot of the current work that's coming out is the water's ability to hold data and a memory and emotion.
Wow.
So if you think about an emotion. It's energy in motion. When you're angry, or if you're in a, it's just like that. Right, this is that Rice experiment. If you're in a room, if you're in a small room with somebody, and it could even be at school, and you have a big moody person, or somebody that really sulks, or somebody that just happens to be seem to make everyone laugh.
Yeah,
one person can change the energy in a room.
That's true. Yeah.
It could be like a virus, both positive and negative. And they're vibrations, they have frequencies. But we can't see them. It's like when I'm speaking to you now through headphones, my computer to yours, but there's no cable, there's no tube that connects you and I. They go through frequency, they go through waves.
Yeah.
And there was a doctor, his name was Luc de Montagne, who got the Nobel Prize in 1984 for discovering the HIV virus. And we went, sounds really train spotting, this does. We went to the World Water Congress towards the end of last year, and he was talking there. And they made a documentary on him. He did something incredible. He took the vial of an HIV virus, HIV blood, from a freezer.
Yeah.
He diluted it to a specific level. He then took the frequency of that water, of that blood. You can measure everything has its natural frequency.
Right.
And he took the frequency and he sent that to another professor in a university in Italy. So that professor took a thing of a vial of blood that didn't have HIV in it and then applied that frequency to it and transferred the virus.
Wow.
This guy's about 90 something now. It's one of the most incredible experiments that I've heard. So this idea that vibration, and I suppose if you think about Buddhist monks or monasteries, they put soups in singing bowls and give them a boing.
That's right.
And they've started to do gong sound baths for people that have in a depressed state. And this is being used more and more in hospitals now, where they'll put people in a room and get one of those big gongs, and for 20 minutes to half an hour, they'll just bash the gong, but they take a little sample of blood before and after, and you can see the blood cells squashed when people are in a fairly heavily depressed state. Just after 20 minutes to half an hour of this sound bath, that vibration softens, allows the blood cells to become more rounded and flow.
Holy shit.
It's amazing.
Oh my God.
It's amazing. So it's a really big, complicated subject, but it's incredible.
Well, I love that. I mean, that's why it's been on my mind since I last spoke to you. I was like, because it's fascinating that we are majority of us is water. Everything, like you said, majority of things is water. Ah, oh, man, I don't even have the words to describe how I feel about it.
There's a lot more. We've been with Dimitri and I have been making, he's been doing like nut milk just to take, it's milk, but it's kind of water. You just infuse, it could be hazelnuts and then blitz it. Milk you buy and put in your coffee when it's oat milk or almond milk or whatever. But you do that, try it with water from the tap. Water that's been put in we've got a singing bowl, bashing the singing bowl.
Right.
For the vibrations. We've got these different crystals because they can restructure the water as well, crystals, and then make the milk from it and make ice cream from it and then taste it.
Oh, wow.
You can taste the difference. And the one from the singing bowl is more nutty and rounded. This is blind tasting it. Then I tasted it and put the singing bowl in my hand and bashed the singing bowl. So my hand was vibrating and I was eating the ice cream with this being applied the same vibration. Luckily, there wasn't many people. Well, there weren't any other people apart from Stephanie here. So I couldn't have got locked up.
Yeah. Heston's off again.
He's off again, yeah.
Have you always been fascinated, like, since you can remember, like how things work and how did that come to be? Have you always been that way?
No, I don't remember as a kid being like that. I remember I happened to find that experience in France at that age and that moment in my life that kind of was like an awakening or falling down a rabbit hole into this multi-sensory wonderland. Bloody hell, there's like a whole new universe here. I never realized. And then started questioning everything. And then I read a book in 1984 by American guys, a good friend of mine, Harold McGee, and it's called On Food and Cooking, the Science and Law of the Kitchen. And this book was on Science of Cooking, not Food Science. And there was a sentence in there when he said brownie meat doesn't keep in the juices. I went, what? Hang on. That's like against everything that I've ever read or ever seen or ever heard any chef saying. And then he goes on to, it's really obvious. He said, well, if when you put a piece of steak in a really hot pan, it sizzles. What is sizzling? It's not fat. It's the water coming out of the steak. Oh, yeah. If browning meat kept in the juices, it would be impossible to have a well-done brown steak. Because if you browned the meat, you couldn't cook it well done because you couldn't cook the juices out because they would all stay in the middle.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That was my wake-up call. I thought, my God, if that made sense to me, if that's challenged that thought. I then went back and questioned everything I could in classical French cooking.
Right,
and found some of them to be true, some of them I wasn't sure, some of them actually was just old wives' tales.
Do you find, because you've got, You've got. Have you ADHD, or you were diagnosed with it as a child?
I got diagnosed. I took myself off to be diagnosed because I wanted to have had it about 5 years ago.
Oh, did you that recently?
Yeah.
Ah, right, right. Yeah. And they said yeah.
Yeah, I did. I did a multiple choice. There's an ADHD multiple choice form first, and I filled in the. I filled in that, and I think the score.
Did you get to the end?
I asked too many questions about it. So you just got, this is exactly it. It shouldn't take that long, she said. So
just give it here. It's fine. We know. Yeah.
20. I think 20. Score of 20 is when you're borderline or you just tip over. There's a tipping point. And I was like 65 or something.
Bloody hell!
And then I've had loads of tests on myself done. I think it was as a walking experiment. And I produce a shitload of serotonin.
Okay.
So I have historically, I have a sweaty head, or let's say a heat sensitive head.
Right.
I have a really busy head. I don't know how busy other people's heads are, but I sometimes know I have a really busy head. And for example, you know, I'll run upstairs to get something. I'll come down with an handfuls of stuff, including maybe a watch that I'd lost 6 months before, but I can't remember what I went up there for in the first place. And then I'd be late, and I don't like being late. I'd be late, but it wasn't because I just sat there and did nothing. I'd in and out of the house five times.
Right.
The longer the further away from my door I am in my house, the more objects I can pass. And the more objects I can pass, the more opportunities there are for distraction or me thinking, God, I might need that. And then I just end this bag of completely and utterly useless kind of disconnected objects that, you know, what happens if a spaceship came and hit my post box? What would I do? I better put that in the bag.
So do you think your head gets really hot? Because it's like a computer. You've got so much going on that that energy is building up. And so it just, your head's just, because you're so busy.
That's exactly why what sparked me off. I was thinking our brain is 25% of our blood and 2% of our body weight and 60% of our glucose.
Okay.
And when it's busy and it's functioning well, I can join dots up like unbelievably, but only needs a little, you know, like when you throw a twig into a bicycle wheel and then you turn the whole bicycle upside down. It just needs a little bit of disruption like that, and then it becomes chaotic. However, since I've been here, I have to say, since we last saw you guys, I run in the morning and go on my mountain bike in the evening, top and tail in the day, and I meditate.
Nice.
That's also made a really big difference.
Yeah, it's funny. Liam Gallagher said a similar thing. Liam Gallagher gets up at like 5 a.m., he said, and he goes for a 5 mile run and he comes back. And if he doesn't do that, he said his day's ruined because his brain is just like, you know, when he goes for a run, he puts everything in order. He's like, oh, yeah, that prick's going to get it. Oh, yeah, they're going to get it. And then he comes back and he's all fine. And
exactly the same. And I have to, don't turn your computer on. Don't, I mean, I don't look at anything on my phone. I take it if I'm going to listen to something when I'm running, but I try and meditate first, get up and meditate, just first thing.
Okay, yeah.
Do you remember Radio 1 used to do this really tenuous link? You'd have to find the connection between two objects.
Yeah.
It would be visible of a word that sounded like something else, and then you'd eventually get there. That's the way my brain would work. So I'd see a cup on the table and I'd think, oh my God, I've forgotten to call my mum. or there's a letter I need to send, or I don't know. And then my head would just go off. It would be off and running. So if I do it before anything wakes up, just grab it. Grab it early.
Go and do it. Yeah. That's a really good idea. I know I found myself physically, literally spinning around in my kitchen the other day because I'm like, right, I need to tidy that up. Okay, well, put the kettle on. Oh, I need to do that. All of a sudden, I was going like 360, just going around and around. And I just said...
On the way to putting the kettle on, you realised that you didn't turn the tap off.
Exactly. And I'm like, but I said it out loud, just pick one. Just fucking pick one. So I get it, man. Yeah. But it sounds like, you know, because you've experienced, I mean, you've achieved so much in your life, and you've experienced, you know, extreme fame and all sorts, man. I mean, you must look back sometimes and go, fucking hell, it's been quite the ride.
It has been a ride. And again, like I mentioned earlier, so just looking back at it, and when. Yeah, and the moments of when I look back at it, moments of extreme loneliness. People looking from the outside in will think, you can be lonely. You know, people say, you know, what can you be wanting for? Well, this is, in fact, I think whether people are become famous or not, whether people are, you know, super, super rich or not, many people with the same problems. And
absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's the hard thing is, you know, if we've got us as a body, each one of us as a human being, we've got our internal universe, trillions of things inside our bodies, all inside our body interacting. So we've got our internal universe and our feelings and thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And then we've got our external universe, which could be anything from friends to family to work to school to play to whatever. And our external universe, we need to be able generally to get on to measure. So we need TikTok time to go to work or go to school, turn up at 9 o'clock, or, you know, money in a bank account and those things. We need that to be human doings. But it's when we try and apply that same measurement to human beings, so every human being suffers. Right, and I think this is one of the problems of modern societies. Our lives, generally speaking, our lives have become so, relatively speaking, much more comfortable, is that then we end up, or quite a lot of people end up making a competition of their suffering. So they don't understand how much, they want people to understand how much they're suffering. But the only person that knows how they suffer is that individual and knows how they feel. And that's why I've always had a problem with that comment when somebody says, I want to make you the best version of yourself. You think, well, how the hell can you? You don't know what's the best version of yourself. The only person that knows that is themselves.
Exactly. So yeah.
This sort of like two measuring systems. And it's with memory that you can think, we human beings start off from a place of suffering. They have to. And that's not being negative, but they have to, because then we work for our reward. And that's how our whole hormonal endocrine pleasure pain system works.
Yes.
However, if we believe that we should be happy, and we've all got the right to be happy, then what we start off from a place of expected happiness, then we're continually disappointed.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's a problem.
Well, that's been said before. Someone said, it was a comedian friend of mine, Dave Longley, and he just said, you know, you're looking for contentment, not happiness. Happiness is an extra thing that takes more chemicals, you want contentment, which is more manageable and more accessible. And it makes totally sense. Yeah.
And in the food world, I'd say that you could take nourishment. It's like eating food. You want to feel fulfilled. And the Greeks, actually, the Stoics, they had a word for this called eudaimonia. And I think they believed that happiness was chasing happiness is something that is only going to leave you disappointed. But you could still have had negative suffering things happen to you or emotions, but you can still have moments of being fulfilled, even going through pain. And you can see it with people that have gone through, you know, what anyone would think of extreme situations, through concentration camp survivors to, you know, I met a soldier that lost his legs in the Afghan war, and he was at this Headley Court Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to him, he was seemed really buoyant, not false, but really buoyant and happy. And I said, how come you seem so happy? And he said something to me that stuck with me. He said, I fell off a cliff emotionally after it. He then experienced some other things. He said, then something made me realize it's only when you've had enough taken away can you begin to appreciate what you've got left.
Wow.
Flipping hell. People like you, the role that they play in terms of inspiring others.
Yeah.
It was funny. Somebody the other day said to me, you wouldn't believe this, said to me the other day, they had about, we're in this sort of quarantine situation and he's in his flat in London. And it was a problem because there was an alarm system didn't work and he said, like, laughing, but the lift for his car
didn't work.
He couldn't get the lift for his car. I said, well, did the other lifts work? He said, yeah. I said, well, could if you walk to the supermarket, it was a bit far. But, you know, in his mind, he was also probably suffering, but it was a funny thing. I did it once. I was doing I was at work doing some photo thing shoot, and it was hot. The studio was hot, and with my heat sensitive head, I can't remember telling you this, but I'm just telling you with toe curling embarrassment and memory. These words came out of my mouth. I said, yeah, I've got a really sensitive head. I can't wear cashmere.
And they were just fell over. For you.
I heard the words come out of my mouth. I thought, where the hell did that come from?
You poor soul.
I went to India to do some cooking thing and someone gave me a cashmere scarf to put on for this photo and then took it off again. It's the only time I've actually think I've had my skin's had any contact with cashmere. Anyway, where did it come from? I'm suffering so much.
I know you poor soul. It's funny because when you were filming with Jade, and that, what was that like in the studio? Because that the heat in there is, it's all over the place.
Filming with Jade was a complete bolt out of the blue, like a thing of lightning, a bullet train that came hurtling in to my life unexpectedly. It was amazing.
Yeah,
Probably shouldn't say this before it's come out on Netflix, but that was like the highlight.
Oh yeah,
it was fantastic. But the studio, I don't know how Jay did it, because if I didn't have to wear a dress and tutu and some headgear, but it was hot, and I did get. I don't know if it was Jay that sorted them out for me, or this little neck fan.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, it was Jade. Yeah, Jade got you that.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because they'd mentioned, I was sort of, because I was in the wings, I'm just watching what's going on. I'm like, fucking hell, it's Heston Blumenthal. This is amazing. And looking at all these things. And then I heard someone say, yeah, we've got to be careful because Heston's got a sensitive head. And I just, and then they were talking about the heat and the thing. They go, yeah, we've got to keep it at this and that. And then I'm like, what the fuck is this? And it just made me laugh. It wasn't being derogatory. They were like, no, we have to keep it because it's going to be uncomfortable for everyone. They were talking about Jade being all dolled up with her wig and everything else. And
that hit the heat on there. I only just had to look at Jade with a wig on and get hot.
Yeah, no.
Like by proxy.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? Well, that isn't that funny as well? But we're doing stuff online because we're all locked in, and we do this thing called Ginfluencers, and we put a DVD of a crackling fireplace on the television behind us, and you can feel the heat from it.
Absolutely. It's like if you have a lemon if you think about biting into a lemon or slice a lemon and you can just feel it's all the juices coming out through it.
Yeah.
You can feel your mouth watering.
It just did. I got that tang in the back of my jaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. So are you working on stuff now, Heston?
Yeah, well, there's quite a bit, actually. There's some TV stuff. But we've got a book that we sort of started about 3 months ago, but now we've gaining pace.
Yeah,
there's a lot development stuff here that we're looking at. We've got involved with a robotics company.
Oh, wow! But that's
a very early days because I wanted to try and do something using robots.
Yeah,
to demonstrate. I think Einstein once said, why do we have to learn stuff we can look up? If we invented computers to do maths for us, use them. I'm not saying don't do maths at school, but maybe you could take half of that school week away and be creative. And the beauty of human beings' ability to imagine things that don't exist and then create from that imagination. And the current education system just squashes it.
Yes.
So if you can free up that time, and I think if you could use robots to do the jobs that robots can do, which should free up time for human beings to do the wonderful things that human beings can do that robots can't do. That was a plan, and use it with schools. So, you know, again, I'm thinking about cooking and eating.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's a lot of research projects we're looking at. We've got involved with an amazing group of people in Australia, which is called Fable Mushrooms, Foods. There's 7-8 different mushrooms in there. And I don't even want to say it's meat replacement because that's insulting to it. It sounds like you shouldn't be eating meat. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this, you eat this, you wouldn't
know the difference.
You wouldn't know the difference.
Wow. No,
it's amazing. So there's lots of stuff like that. Obviously the restaurants are all closed, but I think that, and like everybody, you know, the on the financial side of the business is up the swanny, but everyone's in the same position. So I think it's, and this is easier. What I'm about to say is much easier said than done, but the opportunity to focus on the positive stuff.
Yes.
To what we're going to learn from this period. And I think it comes back to this whole thing about looking at in my world, our relationship with food, the food that we hunt and gather and shop and buy and prepare and cook and eat and share.
Absolutely. Well, people have been cooking more. You can see it. They're all, everybody's learning how to make sourdough. Jade made a kombucha with the SCOBY. And so we're all of a sudden we've gone back to basics and we're all like, no, how do you make a cake? Yeah. So, and
we have been doing, again, Dimitri and I have been doing here, we've been doing stuff with insect biscuits, cricket bread, fermentation with them. And also, you
know, of course you have. I'm not even surprised.
singing bowl insect milk.
Really?
Yes, yeah, so you make the you make an infusion, but you actually put the liquid in a singing bowl and bash it.
We've also got a singing. That's amazing. We've got one. We're gonna do this.
Try some things in and out of the singing bowl. That vibration makes a difference.
Oh, we're gonna do that. That's fantastic. Yeah, Jade's come back in the room. She's like, "What? Like, in a minute, I'm busy." But Heston, this has been incredible. Fantastic. I want to say thank you so much for your patience. Thank you so much for your time.
It's been good to hear your voice and
you, man.
To you and at you. Actually, maybe we should do Jake can send me a text or something. Maybe we could have a Zoom a pair of teeth.
Yes, that would be wonderful. Yes, please. Let's do it. Yeah, I'll get Jake to sort that out immediately. Brilliant.
Perfect.
Heston, thank you.
Thank you very much.
So good. Thanks, man. Cheers.
See ya.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.